on the Saturday after he was elected, he had an audience for journalists. And while he was talking about where he came from and how he managed, how he happened to be there, etc., he just mentioned, he said, "Oh, I'd love a poor church, and I'd love a church which is poor." And people twigged on that immediately, because it was something that they knew that he did, that he lived in Buenos Aires. The capital of Buenos Aires has around just over 2.5 million people. And over almost 750,000 live in slum towns outside of the ring, if you like, the ring of Buenos Aires. And Pope Francis, when he was Archbishop of the city, used to regularly go up there. There was no trains or metro, so he had to take the underground to one part, then take a bus, and then he had to kind of walk into the slums himself. And he would do that on a very, very, very frequent and regular basis. For example, on Holy Thursday, he'd always go to a hospital or to a prison in order to celebrate the Mass of the Lord's Supper, which is the most solemn of the Masses throughout the church's year. And it would normally be celebrated by a bishop in his cathedral. Well, he brought the cathedral to the slums, if you like. That was very impressive. The whole area that you mentioned about the Vatican Bank, two things, I suppose, it is true to say that the people who work in the Vatican, which is principally lay people, and there are also priests and nuns who are working there, their salaries are relatively modest and small. You know, they're not making much money out of it. You'd be much better paid if you were working in an office in Rome. But there is a kind of a prestige, and very often there's kind of a family security. Very often a job will pass from mother to daughter, father to son, and down through generations, although that's reduced a lot in the last few years. And then the Vatican Bank is sometimes, well, it's referred to as the Vatican Bank. It's not really a bank as such. It's called the Institute for Religious Works. And it was set up during the wartime in 1942 by Pope Pius XII. And the reason was because Europe was caught up, in fact, the world was virtually getting caught up in a war. And there was a concern about how to move monies from one part of the world to the other so that the church could continue on its charitable works, etc. And many religious orders would have banked their money in this. It was really a savings bank, a bit like a credit union. The only thing is, you couldn't take a loan from this bank. So if you wanted to add on to your house or your convent or something, you couldn't go to the bank and say, "I need a loan of 50,000. That wasn't going to happen. It was simply a savings bank and a small investment. And it offered a small return then to the Vatican and to the religious orders. A percentage, I don't know what it is. It's not very high anyway. And it would be only equal to whatever any other commercial bank would be offering. But it is true that over the last number of years, there have been not only accusations of money laundering, but proof of money laundering. In other words, there have been people who have accessed accounts there who shouldn't have had accounts. And there were people, a lot of wealthy people, used it more or less to hide money. It was like these offshore accounts. And certainly there's been a lot of evidence that the mafia has put money. It's like a scene from The Godfather. And certainly, you know, I remember setting down a few years ago to write a novel on this. And I wrote a novel just as a pastime, a hobby. I didn't finish it. But any of the stuff that I wrote wouldn't be anything as near to the kind of the craziness that happens now. So in 2010, the European Council's unit called MoneyVal, which controls money laundering throughout the European Union, they discovered that there was, you know, red lights flashing in the Vatican, and they went to investigate this, and they certainly found evidence of money laundering, and they sequestered a number of accounts, etc. And Pope Benedict in 2011-12, he really tightened up on this whole thing to try and root out the corruption that was there. And just a few weeks ago, an Italian Monsignor was accused of helping transfer money from a Swiss account in Switzerland through Italy, using, if you like, his prestigious post at the Vatican Institute for Religious Works. So there's no doubt there is corruption, absolutely. And the hope is that Francis is going to root that out as well. He set up, at the beginning of July, he set up a commission of five people to report to him, to examine all documentation, because he, if you like, is the ultimate patron. So they now have the authority to go in and get all the information and give it to him. The question is now, are they going to scale down that bank, or are they even going to close it and merge it with commercial banks, which may, in the long run, be the wisest thing to do?
And because, of course, the reputation of the Vatican is tarnished by a story like that, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's very true. And also, as you know, public perception is very much more important than what actually happens. Because in any business or commercial life, you'll find if you lose the trust of your customers, you may have a fantastic product. But if the clients don't want to buy it anymore, well, then you're going to have to close down. And certainly it has very much damaged the whole reputation of the Holy See. And then there's, you know, there is that difference between the Vatican as a physical place, a physical entity, a territory, if you like, and then the work of the Holy See, which is, if you like, the Bishop of Rome governing both the city of Rome and administering it, and also the obligation to the worldwide church to, if you like, be its head and provide for the whole church of 1.2 billion Catholics in the globe.